This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speakers today talked about the first 100 days, priorities for Mayor Lightfoot. Our panel included Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist, political analyst for ABC Channel 7, Chicago's ABC-owned station. In 2019, Laura Washington served as a visiting fellow at the University of Chicago's Institute of Politics. She has been the editor and publisher of the Chicago Reporter, a nationally recognized investigative monthly specializing in racial issues and urban affairs. She's a frequent commentator on National Public Radio and a columnist in the Chicago Sun-Times. She was joined by Ben Jarofsky from the Chicago Reader. Ben has been in Chicago since 1981, started freelancing for the Reader in the early 1980s, became a full-time writer in 1990. He loves to zero in on what he calls larger citywide matters, with a special interest in exposing municipal financing scams such as tax increment financing. He writes for the Sun-Times and also has a podcast. Our third panelist was Jen Sabella, who's the co-founder of Block Club Chicago. Currently, she's director of strategy at Block Club. Previously, she was the deputy editor and director of social media at DNA Info in Chicago. Prior to joining DNA, Jen was Huffington Post Chicago editor and a breaking news reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. All of the panelists said this is a new day in Chicago. And they also said the honeymoon between the media and the mayor will probably only last a few more days when the media takes on its primary role as a watchdog for the citizens of Chicago. Referring to Mayor Lightfoot's inauguration, all three panelists said she is tough, her speech was rich and highly detailed, and she made one heck of a lot of promises at the inauguration. Mayor Lightfoot has issued white papers galore: economic development, public health, public transportation, recidivism, transforming the public schools, public safety, LGBTQ issues, and cleaning up of city government. The three agreed that the major priorities in the next 100 days would be dealing with street violence, safety in the streets, police-community relations. Number two, fiscal issues. Mayor Lightfoot faces huge deficits, much larger than her predecessor had indicated. There are pension issues that must be addressed and renegotiated contracts with the police, the fire, and the Chicago Teachers Union. Third important item, they said, is improving education for everyone in the city, stopping the flight of students from Chicago public schools to private charter schools and moving outside of the city. And finally, they said, she must make Chicago honest again, an honest, ethical city council. She said that's the number one reason the panelists agreed that elected her. The panelists said that fear is something that the city council will have to respect. Remember, she is a former federal prosecutor, and she knows how to deal with people like Chicago City Alderman. Just look at what happened at the inauguration.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a new day in Chicago, huh? Can you feel it? Yeah, you clap. I have to say it's a thrill to be up here today, especially with my two colleagues on the stage. Ben and I go way back to the Harold Washington days, where we covered that great mayor together for the Chicago Reporter. And Jen, as I've been following your career for a long time, DNA Info that's the old news. We've got much bigger fish to fry with Block Club, and I'm proud to say that I'm a very proud board member at Block Club. And if you haven't signed up, do it now, or she'll be after you. She'll be after you.
True.
Okay. So a lot of people have been asking me what I thought of the inauguration from Monday, and I just thought it was – I'm going to take my reporter's hat off for a minute and put my, Chicago hat on for a minute and say that I thought it was a spectacular statement about where the city – needs to go. And she was Lori Lightfoot was channeling Harold Washington, and I thought that was very appropriate because I think she shares many of his issues, his causes, his agenda, and particularly his toughness and his style. Where the city is right now, you need another Harold Washington, and she's as close as we're ever going to come to it. So I was thrilled about that. One of the things that I found to be, I don't know if challenging is the right word, but I found to be interesting was how rich and loaded and detailed her speech was, much more detailed than you normally see in an inaugural speech. And I thought that was all good, but it was kind of a little bit overwhelming. You know, politicians love to make promises, but she made a hell of a lot of promises on Monday. I mean, I was going to go through the speeches, try to take notes of all of them, but it was so dense I couldn't do it. But let me just tick off to you what's on her website about what she's going to do as mayor. She's got white papers galore, and each white paper is a topic, and each topic has 7 or 8 or 9 or even 15 points under that topic. So she's got a plan for economic development. She's got a plan for public health. She's going to deal with equitable and efficient transit. She's going to help citizens returning from incarceration. She's going to combat recidivism. She's going to advance arts and culture. She's going to transform the Chicago public schools. We need it desperately. Transform, wow. She's got a plan for a cleaner environment. She's got a plan for affordable housing. LGBTQ policies and issues are on her agenda. Plan for public safety, one of the big ones. And lastly, which she spent a fair amount of time on, a plan to clean up city government. Lots of plans, lots of details. Now, we know that's what politicians do. They want to show you that they're prepared. Particularly, it was important for her to do that because a lot of her naysayers were saying, you know, she doesn't have the experience to be a mayor. She's never run anything big. She's never been a politician. She's never been held elective office. So I get that. But from my point of view, her priorities, especially for the next 100 days, and we're here to talk about the next 100 days, not the next 100 years, which is what it'll take to do this plan. For the next 100 days, she should have three priorities, and they're the same three priorities that her predecessor had. She's got to end and get a handle on the street violence and crime in Chicago. She's got to get a handle and have some big success with improving police-community relations, and particularly around the consent decree, which she was in many ways an author of because of her work on the Police Accountability Task Force. I know she has some criticisms, concerns about the consent decree. She's got to get in and dig in on that one and address that. So public safety, policing, number one. Number two is the money. The financial and managing of the city's budget, huge budget deficit, $750 million is what folks are talking about. She says it's even bigger. The pension crisis. On top of that, while she's managing that money, she's got to manage to renegotiate several major public sector contracts, particularly the police, fire, and the teachers' union. That's number two. Number three, related to the teachers' union, related to education, she's got to, in my book, she's got to improve education for all children in the city. Rahm Emanuel's made some progress, but we've got a ways to go. She's got to work on improving student performance. She's got to end the exodus of students from CPS, which is related to the massive exodus of families from Chicago. She wants to institute elected school board, but there the devil is in the details in terms of what she wants and what's actually pending in Springfield right now. She wants to, I know Andrew Broy is not going to be happy with this one. You mentioned that he's here. She wants to freeze the expansion of charter schools. That was a big important issue for her. So those are that's in her education pot. So those are three priorities, but there's a fourth one that if she can't get this one right in the first 100 days, forget about the rest of it. And that to talk about that one, I'm going to take a page from Donald Trump, believe it or not. He says he wants to make America great again. Well, she wants to make Chicago honest again. And the again, I'm not so sure of because I don't know if it's ever been honest. I'm talking about the corruption, and I'm talking about the issues in City Hall, particularly with the Chicago City Council. She talked about that the other day. She wants to clean up city government. Part of that strategy is to reorganize the Chicago City Council, not just to make it her own council, but to make it an honest, ethical council. That's got to be the first order of business for her. One reason is that was the centerpiece of her campaign. She would not have been elected without her call for government reform, for reforming the city council, for ending corruption. That's what got her elected. That's what got her that 74% of the vote that swept her into office. She can do that. The rest of the stuff, that's got to come later. But in order to clean up the city council, in order to clean up government, she's got to start by being who she is, which is a former federal prosecutor. We have never had a former federal prosecutor, to my knowledge, as mayor of the city of Chicago. That she's got experience and she's got skills and she's got an ethical center that is very different from any of our previous mayors. She also has the advantage that there's a massive federal investigation underway in City Hall. Had you heard about that? Alderman Ed Burke sits for his, he was reinaugurated the other day, but he also is under investigation. I'm hearing that there's going to be an indictment coming very soon, probably not long after Memorial Day. Former Alderman Danny Solis is in the same position. The feds have thousands of hours of tapes, so you better believe there's more indictments coming, there's more investigations coming, and that's all to her advantage. I mean, it's unfortunate for us, but it's all to her advantage because that helps her undergird, it helps her build her political will, and helps her keep the council in line. Now, the other thing that she has an advantage of, this relates to what I just said, is fear. Dick Simpson, the former alderman and one of her biggest allies and one of her early endorsers, told the Sun-Times the other day that he expects that the council will be reasonably frightened. I think they're going to be a lot more than reasonably frightened. I think they're going to be terrified. And I think that in some ways, one of the things that Lori missed an opportunity to do in that speech the other day was to issue a call to action. She had a call to action for us in general. The city needs to come together. We're all about each other's business, to quote Gwendolyn Brooks. But I would have liked to have seen her call on voters, the voters that elected her, the 74% of people who got her into office, who are all constituents of the 50 aldermen, to call on them to keep the pressure on. A very seminal experience for me was working for Harold Washington. And as you know, he, for the first three and a half years of his administration, he couldn't govern because of council wars. But he had a base, a very enthusiastic, very extremely loyal base that supported him through thick and thin. And particularly in the African-American community, he could do no wrong. And his aldermen were terrified of that because they knew that they had to answer to those voters if they didn't do everything that Harold Washington said. Mark Brown told a great story in the paper today about Perry Hutchinson. Some of you may remember the late not-so-great Alderman Perry Hutchinson, who had to be dragged into a city council vote in a wheelchair because Harold Washington needed his vote. That's the kind of fear that she needs to encourage in the city council. And I'll
Laura, thank you, because I have this fear. Unless we get Ben and Jen in, I'm going to be driven out of town on a rail. So thank you very much. Let's... Ben Jaworski.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jaworski is my name. I've been writing for about 2,000 years for the Chicago Reader newspaper. Before that, I was a writer for The Reporter, as Laura acknowledged. And yes, one of the first faces I saw when I walked into the Chicago Reporter way back in the dinosaur era was a much younger Laura Washington.
Don't call my dinosaur, please.
She was the education reporter back in those days, and she knew everything about the city of Chicago. I was brand new to Chicago, so she was always telling me how wrong I was, and we'll see if that continues, that pattern continues. Ben, no, Ben, I'm from the South Side, Ben. You're not from Chicago. So that's Laura Washington. Something else you should know about Laura Washington, she left out of that little introduction of hers, is that we went together, yes indeed, Laura, we went together down to Hyde Park in November of 1982 to the Hilton Hotel in those days, to watch Harold Washington announce that he was running for mayor. And then afterwards, we ate Chinese food at a restaurant in Hyde Park. I was so happy that day. And yes, indeed, I've been a reporter and a journalist and a writer in the city of Chicago, but pretty much everybody knows where my heart lies when it comes to politics in the city. And so a lot of folks in this room may not agree with my worldview, but we can be diplomatic and get along about that. But I was rooting for Harold Washington big time in the 80s. I'm not from Chicago originally, but that 1983 election and then the next 2 years of council wars was a real wake-up moment for me because I saw firsthand the enormous amount of bigotry, hate, and racism that exists in the city of Chicago. And most of that has been swept under the rug, in my humble opinion, since Harold Washington died. So when I view what Lori Lightfoot is up against, that's kind of at the top of the list. We've been dealing with that since the turn of the last century. Yes, indeed. I cannot talk about Lori Lightfoot, really, without addressing the previous administrations. I'm forgetting their names at the moment. Maybe Laura can help me with my memory there. Oh, boy, who just left, and the one who went before him in 2011. I was very critical of both mayors that preceded Lori Lightfoot. I thought largely we wasted a tremendous amount of resources in this city. They were unfair. They were dishonest, in my humble opinion. They weren't transparent about how they ran government. It was almost comically so in the last mayor that everything he did as mayor of the city of Chicago was about branding his reputation as some super-duper genius who was smarter than everybody else and knew how to save Chicago, including parts of Chicago that didn't even need saving. And let me just take this point. Laura said she's got to transform the schools. For as long as I've been living in the city of Chicago, I've been hearing mayors tell me that the schools are in wretched shape and only they can save them. And I remember Harold Washington said he's going to take the politics out of the schools. First thing Mayor Daley did, well, it took him about 4 years, but he took complete control of the public schools, and the establishment in the city welcomed it, said he was doing a great job. He's an absolute maestro. He was called the education mayor. He had a nationwide reputation for being the genius that was going to run Chicago public schools and completely transform public schools. Guess what? His predecessor comes in, says the schools are terrible. I have to change them. Now that he's leaving office, he's patting himself on the back for transforming schools. So I always ask people, how could Mayor Manuel save the public schools if Mayor Daley already saved them? And so this is the problem of covering politics in the city of Chicago for a long time. As long as your memory is intact, you not only remember having Chinese food with Laura Washington on the day that Harold Washington announced he was running for mayor, but you also remember all the promises made, broken, and shattered down through the years. So as the perspective I bring to it, and I will pass the ball to the great Jen Sabella.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
I'm glad Ben was Debbie Downer, because that's usually me. So, thanks. I'm Jen Sabella. I am co-founder of Block Club Chicago. If you don't know what Block Club is, you should check it out, blockclubchicago.org. We're the former DNA Info Chicago team when we shut down in 2017. A bunch of us got together. We were shut down by Joe Ricketts in 2017. We got together and decided we wanted to keep it going. So we're now a nonprofit newsroom. We have reporters embedded in the neighborhoods they cover. So when it comes to the election, we come at it very differently. We came at it very differently. Our reporters are in the town halls on the ground. They're in the community meetings. They're hearing from the aldermen every day. So one thing that I actually just went on social media, like I usually do, and asked what people wanted to see from Mayor Lightfoot in the first 100 days. Overwhelmingly, the people who responded to Block Club said they would like to see public safety improved, which we all talked about, and I think the big challenge for Mayor Lightfoot is going to be balancing policing and improving police-community relations and having a good relationship with police. I know from the left, during the campaign, she was really attacked for being a cop, which for just her presence on as of her job as a federal prosecutor and her presence on the police board. So she's kind of walking this line between, you know, wanting to hold bad cops accountable and also letting the police department know that she's with them and that she wants to improve, like make the whole city safer for everybody. Another overwhelming thing our reporters hear every day on their beats is a lack of affordable housing. And like Laura mentioned, Mayor Lightfoot addresses this at length on her website and in some white papers. But there are some things that does seem like a giant issue, but it's actually funny when you look into some of the laws in the books in Chicago and some of the ordinances that have been around forever, how stupid they are. I mean, we just did a story this morning on the woman who was murdered, the teenager who was murdered in Scottsdale, who's from West Englewood, the pregnant teenager, and her car got 3 parking tickets over the 3 weeks she was reported missing, and police and her family were searching for her. And there's just nothing in place to scan. We can scan that license plate and know that you're going to get booted, but we apparently can't scan that license plate and know that this is a missing person. Mm-hmm. So there are things like that that seems like a pretty simple fix, and it seems like something that could be done through better communication within departments and changing things up and opening up City Hall to people who are having these problems and making people feel more welcome. These are all things that Mayor Lightfoot has vowed to do. So hopefully that will work out. Also, when it comes to affordable housing, closing some of the loopholes that allow developers to pay into a general fund instead of adding affordable housing to developments in neighborhoods that are gentrifying. So those are just some of the things that we hear the most from residents.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jim. Folks, if anybody has questions, staff?
Damn.
Hello out there. Okay.
Staff. It's tough on the staff.
I could just, while we're waiting for the cars, Jen, your point about opening up City Hall, I think it's a really wonderful one. And I don't know if you've all heard about the opening up of City Hall in terms of the wall that was the wall of City Hall that separates the mayor's office from the county board's, the county from the mayor's side, was opened up for the first time in I don't know how many years, the day of the inauguration. So that was a really important, encouraging symbol. Yeah, walls can matter, and
exactly.
When they come down, it's a good thing.
Amen.
So that opens up an interesting question. What sort of relationship do you see between the president of the county board, Tony Preckwinkle, and Mayor Lightfoot? Certainly, they had a very bitter and pointed campaign against each other, and Tony Preckwinkle has said, well, she's a resident of the city of Chicago. As president of the county board, she represents a tremendous number of people who live in the city of Chicago. So what sort of relationship do you see evolving between the two of them?
Well, it's too early to tell, but they did have a hopefully congenial, I heard from both sides, they had a congenial lunch last week before the inauguration, and they are talking. They have a lot. They can go a lot further if they work together than they can. They're both really. I mean, there was a lot of debate during the campaign about who was more progressive, or who was the real reformer. But I think they're both fundamentally reformers and progressive politicians. And I think that they want to work together. And I think they will. I mean, they're women. Women know how to women know how to work together. We don't have those issues.
Yes.
Yeah, I think they'll work together.
Ben?
Yeah, they Preckwinkle worked well. Worked with all the other mayors, so why wouldn't she work with this one?
She didn't work well with Rahm.
She sure. She, first of all, she ducked out in 2014 instead of running against.
Well, that's the political. Yeah. She couldn't stand Rahm.
Well, except for the people in this room, I don't know what many people in the city of Chicago who like the guy.
She didn't work well with Rahm.
But I thought she.
Well, when each of you write your book, we'll see two opposing views.
You got a lot.
Okay. This question here is from City Club member Norman Handler. Wow, we have enough questions here till get to the end of the legislative session. Okay. This is from City Club member Nora Handler. Nora, where are you? Right back there. Okay, good. Ben, this is right up your alley. She's with Supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. How can TIF money help the city versus the way it has been used in the past?
Right out of the box, huh?
Well, this is the City Club.
Yeah,
you know.
No. So I guess I don't, for the City Club, have to explain how the TIF program works. But, I'm pretty cynical and jaded, I must admit, when it comes to mayors and the TIF program. And the reality is this. That the TIF program is a source of free money, essentially, for mayors. It's not on a tax bill, so most taxpayers don't even know what it's paying. Sort of the conventional wisdom in the city of Chicago is that it's not a tax hike, even though it is. It's intended to help the poorest of poor, low-income neighborhoods, but the loopholes in the law make it available to absolutely every neighborhood. So it's the city council rolls over and approves every single TIF transaction that the mayor face. So it's like kind of hard if you're an incoming mayor, and as Laura was pointing out, money's tight and you don't know where to find it, to suddenly say, you know, that guy from the Reader is right all these years, and we should just let this money go back to the taxing bodies that gave it to us in the first place. So my cynical hunch is that Lori will continue, as Rahm did, and just use the money as she sees fit, because it's discretionary money, essentially. It's free money for her to spend. My idealistic view, which I'm always nervous when I'm idealistic about anything that happens in the city of Chicago, is that Lori will really, quote-unquote, reform the program, turn most of the money back to the taxing authorities who gave it to the city in the first place, or allow the city to take it from them in the first place, so that we can deal with the larger budget issues that Laura was talking about. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Okay, good. Jen, this is for you. It's from Charlie Gardner, Roosevelt University Life Trustee. What should or will Mayor Lightfoot do with Janice Jackson and Ed Johnson?
Well, yesterday they announced that they're keeping Janice Jackson and Eddie Johnson on board. I think during the campaign, too, Lori Lightfoot was clear that she wasn't going to get rid of Eddie right away, that it takes a really long time to find a police superintendent, and replacing someone as Memorial Day weekend rolls around and the violence gets worse in the summer seemed like a ill-advised move. I know that from being in the same, we're in the same newsroom with Chalkbeat, but the Janice Jackson is pretty popular school CEO, especially compared to the last couple school CEOs. So I think that it makes sense to keep them in place for now. That said, I think like Eddie Johnson is sticking around for 4 years? I have no idea, but I guess we'll see what they get through this, what happens this summer, and if they can work together. And like, in terms of what we hear from police, too, Eddie's not the least popular police superintendent. Again, that's not saying much. But, you know, I guess it remains to be seen.
I just want to quickly add that I think it was she's been wise to keep some other positions in place, too. Either there have been some vacancies because some of Rahm's commissioners didn't wait for him to leave. They left on their own. So there's a vacancy she has to fill with acting interim folks. And she's doing it. She can't replace all these people all at the same time. And I think that it was very wise of her, particularly to keep those two positions in place for the reasons you say, Jen. And I think that was one of the biggest mistakes that Tony Perequico made in her campaign, was to call for, to basically say that she was going to get rid of Eddie Johnson out of the box, because I think that just created a lot of insecurity and a lot of concern in the community, because you can't replace a police superintendent overnight, as Jen pointed out.
Plus, he's one of my former students, so, you know, very important. Anyhow, this is from Carlos Ponce. Carlos, back there. This is for you, Laura, but I'm sure that Ben and Jen will chime in. Why did Mayor Lightfoot select Alderman Gil Villegas as her floor leader? And also, any surprises in any of the other committee chairmanships that she made?
I think that Villegas was chosen because he is someone who gets along with his colleagues, who is very good at, you know, relating and networking with his colleagues. I think it's also, I mean, that's an important role, to have a floor leader, the respect and communication that he has. I also think because of his ethnic background, being Latino, I think she's very interested in creating a rainbow coalition, not just in her own government, but in council leadership. So I think that was the reason behind that. What was the one that surprised? There was one that surprised me, but I don't remember what it was right now. So I'll go to you guys.
Yeah, I agree with Laura. I thought that was. I actually have to give her a lot of credit for the way she handled the city council committees. Shameless plug for my podcast. Joanna Klonsky was on our show, and it's Monday if you want to listen to it. I urge everybody to listen to it. But at the end, political geeks that we were, we on our own just informally went down the whole city council to see who was going to vote and make predictions. And when I was going through the list of aldermen, I realized that the way Lori gave jobs to different aldermen, you know, to make them committee chairs, it really reminded me, I don't mean this in a bad way, what Fast Eddie Radoliak did in 1983 when he was snatching the city council away from Harold Washington. He created more committees to take care of his 29, to give them like a job reason as opposed to just a typical racial reason to be against Harold. And so I was like, you know, there are young people running this campaign, but they show a little historical knowledge there. So I thought it was pretty good. Also, that move, that straight-up gangster move she made at the speech where she, like, found her inner Mike Tyson and turned around and, like, stared down the alderman, and everybody was cheering. And I was like, man, that was...
The aldermen weren't cheering.
Yeah.
Ray
Lopez was pretty upset.
You know, the people in the crowd were cheering, and that was a pretty slick move. And she's really effectively, I think, branded anybody who stands up against her as Ed Burke. So anybody who criticizes her at this moment sort of has Ed Burke's head on their shoulders. So that was a pretty good move by Lori Lightfoot. So despite the fact that she's a rookie, politician, it's her first time holding office, elected office, she's showing that she knows a thing or two.
So, yeah, talk to Anthony Beal about it. He knows firsthand. She buried him, took his committee chairmanship away, and pretty much excoriated him.
Mm-hmm. I know some decisions she made on the left to please some of the people who were supporting Tony Preckwinkle during the campaign, like Sue Garza running like workplace committee, and Scott Waggy's back. I mean, that's a huge change, having Scott there. And he I was talking to somebody recently who was saying, you know, Scott doesn't. Oh no, it wasn't me. I read it, and it was Walter Burnett saying that Scott just bangs his own drum and doesn't listen to anyone, and he's going to stand with his principles no matter what. And he's like, who knows what we're going to get? And I think everyone's a little like rattled, like, oh, like the people who are used to doing things the old way are a little bit rattled by these new committee chairs. And I think that's I'm excited for what the future holds.
Okay, great. This is from Kylie Rushinsky. Kylie, where are you? Okay. Kylie, congratulations. She's a recent graduate of Notre Dame University. By the way, Kylie, if you were here when Mayor Pete was here, we all learned that Notre Dame University is actually outside the municipal boundaries of South Bend. How's that for a little trivia? Okay. This is her question. What concrete steps can be taken in the first 100 days to prove to traditionally marginalized communities that this administration will work for them? Who would like to jump on that one?
Well, I would start just by saying, I think she's saying all the right things. I would say it's about her personal presence being felt in some of those communities. I think she started to do that last week and over the weekend. She spent a lot of time on the west side of Chicago, which has been the most disenfranchised part of the city forever. And it was neglected by Harold Washington. It was neglected by Eugene Sawyer, and it was neglected by every mayor since then. And I think she's trying to send a message that she's not going to do that anymore. And I think one of the ways she's doing it is just being out in the community and being seen, which is something that Rahm Emanuel only did when he was trying to orchestrate something.
Yeah, I think that that's her speech where she spent so much time talking about public safety was a good start. Get rid of the good God, red light cameras and pounding cars, the crazy regressive way we have of financing government through parking tickets and traffic tickets and taking cars away from people. That would be a very practical
and
thing.
And water bills.
And water bills and garbage bills, et cetera. And then, of course, there's these two mega TIF deals that Rahm ran through the city council in his last weeks. It's over $2.3 billion or so dollars dedicated. There's a lawsuit on the Lincoln Yards deal. It would be quite remarkable If Lori Lightfoot were to somehow or other join that lawsuit or not fight that lawsuit, it would be the exact opposite of how Rahm Emanuel handled the parking meters lawsuit that he confronted when he came in the office and had to deal with the parking meter deal, which everybody now realizes was a horrendous deal. So that would be a very significant moment if she were to join the community activists with their lawsuit.
Jenna, any comment?
Yeah, I think like the community activists are already in City Hall, which is also really interesting. During the transition, she had a bunch of people on board who used to, you know, run protests in City Hall. People who were being pushed out by the police under Rahm are now invited in, and they have a seat at the table. So I think that that also is like winning over some communities where they felt like no one was listening to them for a long time.
Very good. We have two questions here that are very similar. One from Karen Kane with Karen Kane Consulting. Karen, where are you? Right down there. Good. And Linda Foreman, City Club member, right at the same table. Do you guys get together on this question? Okay. Here it is. As Mayor Lightfoot, quote unquote, cleans up Chicago, how do small businesses access and contribute to expanding opportunity in the face of a city bureaucracy? And what can we look forward to in the next 100 days?
I just have been reading a lot about this, and I was just talking about this yesterday, about the aldermanic prerogative changes that the executive order that was made, and how like it'll actually work. And in Joanna Klonsky actually helped explain this to me a little bit, but instead of going to your alderman and your alderman saying, yeah, maybe I'll fix your awning if you come to my fundraiser next week, that is no longer going to happen. Somebody will come in, they can still go to the alderman's office, but the alderman has to show their work before denying a permit. So and you don't need to be in the pocket of someone. You don't have to know anyone. If you're doing the right thing, if you're asking for something as a small business, you don't have to jump through any additional hoops. And that's at least what Mayor Lightfoot has promised. So we'll see how it all works out and how the departments are going to have to work together. So the alderman's office is going to have to work directly with the departments who are issuing these permits. But from small business owners, we hear this stuff all the time. We got ticketed because our ramp is like kind of off base, but we couldn't get a permit to fix it, or it's boring stuff. But these are the stuff that costs businesses tens of thousands of dollars, which is a big deal to a small business. Mayor Lightfoot said she would close some loopholes that when the city gives grants to small businesses, instead of matching grants, just giving the grants outright. So you're not required to raise a certain amount of money before getting that help from the city. So those are two things that we've heard about and hopefully will help small businesses.
Great. Ben, you want to chime
in? Yeah, no, my wife has run a small business in the city of Chicago since 1980. It's a hair salon. So when Lori Lightfoot made that comment in her speech about the hair salon, I know you're not supposed to cheer in the press row, but I was like, oh, yeah. Did my wife add that line in there? And there was a lot of lines in that speech. I was like, did they get that out of a Laura Washington column in the Sun-Times? I could tell you, from real experience, the city is not friendly to small businesses, and the bureaucracy. They're probably going to kick me out of this room, but this aldermanic prerogative thing, I think, in my humble opinion, is way totally exaggerated. I think that it's largely an issue that is. I wouldn't even put it in my top 10 of things bothering the city of Chicago now. I don't even know if it would be in my top 20. All the real dumb ideas that have come out of the city of Chicago in the last 20 years have not come from aldermen. They've come from the mayor's office. And the aldermen, instead of showing prerogative, just fall right in line. So to me, that's the cultural problem that Chicago has to address. Whether the aldermen will have the freedom, the independence, and the open-mindedness to really investigate whatever the mayor is proposing. I am a little more optimistic about this current mayor and what she will propose, but, you know, I've been fooled in the past. Jane Burney, when I first got here, had sort of turned from many of the promises she ran on in 1979. So I would hope that the alderman would remain checks and balances. So
Two quick questions on that. Your wife's salon, does her salon do Mayor Lightfoot's daughter's hair because it was absolutely beautiful.
Oh, no, I'd like to say that she did,
okay,
but...
she didn't. Next question.
Any customers?
You've got these aldermen who are called Democratic Socialists, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see Mayor Lightfoot dealing with those folks? Some of their requests are not kind of traditional here in Chicago.
Well, they're traditional requests from people of that ilk. You know, they're like traditional requests from people like me, but they've been traditionally ignored in the city of Chicago. So that is a very interesting question. Will they continually be ignored by Mayor Lightfoot? And my guess is, if I had to make a prediction on this one, that the mayor will be moving toward the center, away from some of the more democratic, socialistic proposals, particularly on issues of taxing the well-to-do. The city of the progressives in the city of Chicago, or radicals, or lefties, or whatever you want to call them, or us, have always been trying to figure out ways to get rich people to pay more money for city government, and we've been largely unsuccessful year after year after year. So now there's six aldermen, I think, isn't that right? Six dedicated to the notion that we should have a different kind of way of raising money through taxing, by taxing wealthier people. My guess is that Lori Lightfoot will not embrace any of these initiatives. And so you could hear she'll probably be the subject of criticism down the road from the Democratic Socialists.
How long do you think, and Laura, maybe this is all you could start, how long before what some of us say right now is a honeymoon between the Sun-Times, Tribune, and other newspapers, media, and the mayor will continue? What might lead them to sort of battle against each other?
I don't think it's going to last much more than another week or so, actually, if it's even still in effect right now. I mean, we're watchdogs. We're supposed to ask the tough questions and hold leaders accountable, and especially, as I said earlier, when you've got such lofty goals and you have such a long list of accomplishments, you're setting yourself up as a target for the media to take them down. So I think that, and I think that's our job. I wanted to just say something, too, about the whole issue of the aldermanic privilege. The thing I like the best about her executive order, whether or not aldermanic privilege is as widespread as we think it is that it calls for transparency in terms of the communications that aldermen have to have with the bureaucracy. If there's an issue about a permit or a question, everything has to be in writing, everything has to be documented. So that's a way of keeping everybody honest and having a public record of this, which I think will go a long way to cut down on the corruption.
Oh, and by the way, you know, we're going to have Mayor Lightfoot will speak to the City Club next Tuesday. Wasn't sure about the date.
Sold out, I heard. Jason,
oh, yeah.
There's like 1,100 people on the waiting
list. We can always put people upstairs and we'll pipe in the audio and so on. This question, a little different than some we've had. This is from Eric Skamra with Dell Technologies. Eric, where are you? Right over there. Okay. It's a technology question, Dell Technologies. What should be the top technology initiatives for the new administration in order to deliver citizen-centered digital government services while protecting the citizens' digital identity and data assets? Jim's ready to chomp on that.
I would say number one is getting internet access in areas of the city that don't have it, because a lot of areas, we're a digital-only publication, and we realize that our site can't be read by a lot of people in the city, and we're trying to figure out ways to fix that in terms of getting people the stories through social media. They can read it on their phones, making our stuff more accessible, even sharing some of our stories with print outlets in communities. But that's a huge issue, and I think Mayor Lightfoot has mentioned that. I don't know when she'll tackle that issue, but also, like I just mentioned about the parking tickets, we have all these systems that don't work together right now. We have a lot of data on the city website. We have a lot of like stuff out there. Like during the elections, Block Club worked with 10 other outlets on something called Shy.Vote, where we created a comprehensive guide to the elections. It's meant to inform voters. sometimes let people look up what who their alderman is and take a little quiz to figure out, you know, who they should vote for and where the candidates stand on issues. And we're just trying to make people more involved in the process. But we have to make it accessible for people more than anything else. So by, like, streamlining these systems so they're not, like, 20 different platforms that are operating all separately and nothing is communicating with each other. It just doesn't really make sense. Like, I know Xerox runs our red light camera contract and some other contracts with the city. There's a lot of smart people. I am not a technology expert by any means, but I just refuse to believe that in 2019 there's not a way to link, like, license plate technology to a missing persons database. So it's things like that, looking at these gaping holes and getting people who do know technology to come in and figure out the easiest and the fastest way to kind of get this information to be more accessible, not only for people within government, but for people who want to know more about their government.
Benjamin?
I couldn't add. She covered it all.
Okay. Jen, that was real accolade you just received. That was great.
Thanks.
Okay. This is from City Club member Bruce Handler. Bruce, where are you? Right back there. He wants to know if Mayor Lightfoot should hire more police. And I'd like to add to that, the City Council, when Ram was mayor, they approved this new police fire training academy, I believe in the 37th Ward, Emma Mitz's Ward. And Mayor Lightfoot, I think, was against it. Emma Mitz was given a committee chairmanship. Do you think the mayor may look at that and say maybe we should reconsider that? New police and fire academy?
I think Lori Lightfoot's position was that it didn't necessarily need to be constituted as it was planned. And at one point she was even talking about, I think she backed off this a little bit, but she was talking about taking some of the closed schools and refurbishing them and using them, because her argument was you don't want this monument in this one location. It's basically just another monument to the police department that's not open to the community, that's not accessible to the community. You need to have training. Training needs to be integrated throughout the city. So I think that she's not necessarily for it as it stands. But I think that the horse may already be out of that barn in terms of how far along they are on the planning. So I think that the training is obviously a crucial part of what we need to go moving ahead on in terms of our policing in the city, and it's a really important part of the consent decree.
Any comments?
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing that the younger activists that I talk to, they have a different worldview than people of my generation when it comes to police. I believe I've always held the notion that most residents in the city of Chicago want more police in their neighborhoods. They may want their police trained better so that they can get along with communities instead of being at war with communities. They want police to be more sensitive and treat everybody the same. But generally, my sense is when I go to a community meeting, people want more police. But many activists that I talk to come on my show, they're like, no, we should decop the city. And many people were, they like it was a badge of dishonor against Lori Lightfoot that she was a former federal prosecutor. She was they called her the cop. This is an issue that she's going to struggle with the progressive members or the Democratic Socialist members of the council. But I do believe, personally, this is the old guy speaking, that we should have more police, but they should be trained a lot better, and they should be representative of the communities that they come from. There should be more black police officers, obviously. I think it's a great way of investing in a neighborhood because these are people who live in the city of Chicago or are required to live in the city of Chicago, so it's like a direct investment. I think it would be a better investment of our city tax dollars to hire more police officers and make them live in the city of Chicago than just to pick one example, spend $1.3 billion building a new gentrified neighborhood in an already gentrifying neighborhood. So that's kind of how I view it.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have two more questions here and then a comment. This is from Bill Bergman, City Club member. Bill, where are you? He's with Truth in Accounting. No, it's not an oxymoron. Okay. He wants to know, how should the new mayor deal with city and state relations? Now, Mayor-elect Lightfoot went down to Springfield. She met with legislators on both sides of the aisle. I assume she met with Governor Pritzker in that. But how should she, moving forward, deal with the state legislature, the governor, and so on?
Well, one thing I was interested, I noted the only major player from Springfield not at the inauguration was House Speaker Michael Madigan. Has Michael Madigan ever spoken to this group? No? Yes?
I don't remember.
Yes?
He
okay.
has.
Some old institute. One? 80s? 90s? he spoke. He came here? Oh, a couple years ago. All right. So anyway, he wasn't there. I noticed that. I don't know what to read into that. Cullerton was there.
Well, we have a busy busy session right now.
Yeah, well, so. I said Cullerton was there. Mm-hmm. Pritzker was there. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor Stratton was there. I mean, everybody else found a way to, you know, get from Springfield. Anyway, whatever. just throwing that out there as an observation. And so I think that the key, Laura said this earlier, and she was right on, is that if we're not going to raise taxes, if we're going to limit the raise of taxes in the city of Chicago, and if it's exceeding unpopular to raise property taxes in the city of Chicago, as we all know, then you're going to have to get some assistance from the state, and she's going to have to get 100% behind the effort for a fair tax, which means raising the rate on the highest earners, on their state income tax, with the notion that we get some property tax relief and more money for our cities and our municipalities. Now, I don't know if the current program, the current proposal by Governor Pritzker, will be able to accomplish all those goals.
If it gets passed,
if it gets passed by the voters, I got a feeling.
Well, you give us a lead, and we're doing a program at the end of June on Governor Pritzker's first legislative session.
Yeah, so she's going to have to join that effort.
Okay. One last question. One is from Martin Dionne, who's with the Quebec government office in Chicago. He wants to know, what do you think Lori Lightfoot's vision of Chicago is as a global city?
Wow.
Jen?
I'll weigh in on this. I think that, like, it's really depressing when you go and travel to a different country or a different city, and the only thing people know about Chicago is its violence. So I think that that's one thing that I hope Mayor Lightfoot would try to tackle, just trying to spread the word about more positive things happening in the neighborhoods and more efforts to stop violence. And I think that we have a lot of responsibility as the media in this as well. Instead of doing a story that somebody was shot a half a mile from Lori Lightfoot's house in Logan Square, which was a story yesterday on TV news channels, why is that like the headline? Why do we count how many people were shot over Memorial Day weekend when it is a 3-day weekend and we're just adding a day onto the regular weekend totals? I don't know. I think we need to rethink how we as media outlets cover crime. We at Block Club, where we have a story coming out on all of the things going on this weekend that are alternatives for kids to do in the neighborhoods, that there's different parades on the south side. There's like a bike tour for peace in Inglewood. There's like a 5K Marquette Park. There's all this great stuff going on, and that stuff is never talked about. So I do think that we as the media have a responsibility here, not to every weekend, after every long weekend, show up to a press conference and grill the mayor and grill the police chief. We have to think about how we're reporting this stuff and how it's contributing to our reputation as a crime-ridden city.
Okay. Either of you. Thank you. Okay. Now, I have this request. Carolyn, where are you? Carolyn Craycraft, back there. She wants us to acknowledge the important role played by former alderman, now deceased, Len Dupre, for people like Mayor Washington and down to Lori Lightfoot. It's been 10 years since Len left us at the age of 101. So thank you for that comment, Caroline. Okay, we just have two last items. Number one, let's give all of our panelists a big round of applause.